Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to give you an update on what's going on with regards to the warfare, because Russia has started hitting back after the explosion on the Crimea Bridge last week. They've come out fighting on all fronts. So they've been launching a lot of missile attacks on various Ukrainian cities. And they've also started using kamikaze drones. So I'll give you a bit more detail on what a kamikaze drone is. We'll have a look at a bit of footage on that. I'll provide you with an update on the recent vote that was undertaken by the United Nations. 193 countries were asked for their opinion on the annexation of the four areas of Ukraine. And you won't be surprised to hear that it wasn't a unanimous vote condemning the annexation. So I'll give you the details on how many countries did vote in favour, how many voted against, and how many abstained. I'll share with you the outcome of the recent meeting between 50 countries from the West with regards to future funding for Ukraine, and also the recent statements made by Russia with regards to the risk of this war expanding into World War III. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think the implications of everything in today's video are for Russia and the global economy. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. I am edging closer towards 200,000, but it's still some way away yet. So if you haven't subscribed yet, please do so. Don't forget, I always include chapters in these videos. If you don't have time to watch the whole video, you can just pick and choose what you'd like to see. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon, and Amazon shopping links. As you're probably aware, over the last few weeks, Ukraine have made significant progress in their battle against Russia and have regained over 6,000 square kilometres of land. And to consolidate on all of these victories, there was recently an explosion on the bridge that Russia built joining the mainland to the annexed area of Crimea. And that explosion caused a partial collapse of one of the road bridges and the rail bridge caught fire. Now, that explosion took place the day after President Putin's 70th birthday. And clearly, that wasn't the birthday present that he was hoping for. And Russia has now significantly upped its offensive. And the latest reports are that 40 cities in Ukraine have come under aerial attack from missiles and kamikaze drones. And these attacks have not been limited solely to the front line of fighting. And Kyiv, the capital city of Ukraine, has been targeted for the first time since the early days of the conflict. Now, in terms of using long-range missiles, Russia has a variety of options at its disposal. The most expensive of all is the X-101, which is reported to have a cost of around $13 million. The Kalibr missile is the next most expensive at around $6.5 million. Iskander's cost around $3 million. Onyx $1.25 million. X-22's around $1 million. And the Tokayu missile comes in at around $300,000. And when you look at the cost of these missiles, you can start to get a flavour as to why this war is so expensive from Russia's perspective. It was reported by military experts that on October the 10th, Russia fired at least 84 cruise missiles and 24 kamikaze drones, and the estimated cost of that single day of bombing was somewhere between $400 and $700 million for one day of offensive. Now, as you know, I try to remain as neutral as possible in terms of my reporting of all of these issues, but from an economic point of view, what a sheer waste of technology and money missiles are. This form of technology is designed to be destructive, so it has a negative impact from an economic point of view. Firstly, Russia is spending all of this money, all of this research and development, all of this cash on something that literally goes up in smoke as soon as you've launched it. And in terms of what the impact of those missiles is, obviously, wherever they land, it causes death and destruction, and the economic impact is massive because whatever it's hitting will need to be rebuilt. You've got the loss of the income that's being produced, and also, obviously, from the loss of life perspective, there's the humanitarian issue, but also the fact that you're losing people who would have a positive impact on GDP for that country. So my overall assessment of missiles is that, firstly, they're a complete waste of money, and secondly, they are detrimental to the long-term economic prospects of whichever country is using them, and also whichever country they're landing in. So in an attempt to start saving some money on the cost of this war, Russia is now using what's been referred to as kamikaze drones. Now, if you're not a military expert, you may not have heard of a kamikaze drone. I thought it was worth sharing some footage with you and talking you through exactly what these things are. Now, I'm pretty sure that most people are familiar with the concept of a drone. It's relatively common these days to see people flying drones around towns and cities, either for recreational use or to use to take aerial video footage or photos. And they're relatively inexpensive, although they can be quite annoying if somebody's flying one around your garden. But drones, which are essentially unmanned aerial vehicles, have been around for quite a long time, and it's reported that they were originally used in military combat back in World War II. Now, the drones that Russia are currently using are produced and made by Iran and have been developed specifically for military warfare. These drones are around 11 feet long and 8 feet wide and are fitted with a 50 kilogram warhead at the front. The drones have a range of up to 600 miles and travel at up to 111 miles per hour. And it's reported that they cost around $20,000 each. The Shahed 136 drone belongs to a category of aerial weapons known as loitering munitions, also commonly called kamikaze or suicide drones. They have the capability to wait around the target area until instructed to attack, when they then fly into a target, detonating an explosive payload on impact. The Shahed 136 is manufactured by state-owned Iran Aircraft Manufacturing Company and has been in operation since 2021 and has been described as conceptually a hybrid between an unmanned aircraft and a cruise missile. It's reported that the noise of the engine on the drone is very loud, like a chainsaw or a motorbike, which means that they can be heard coming from afar. It's reported that a Russian delegation visited an airfield in Iran in June to examine the weapon capability of these drones, and that delivery was accepted in August when officials started training with them. Now, in terms of the effectiveness of these drones, it's been reported that because of their relatively low speed, only around 100 miles an hour versus 2,000 miles an hour for a cruise missile, that they're relatively easy to defend against. And Ukrainian forces claim to have shot down multiple of these kamikaze drones using air defense systems and even handheld guns. Now, other reports have said that because they are relatively easy to defend against, Russia have been sending multiple drones to the same area in an effort to land as many strikes as possible. And other commentators have stated that the use of these drones shows that Russia is running short of long-range weaponry and also is wanting the more cost-effective way of keeping this war going. I wanted to provide you with a quick update on the Crimea Bridge situation because I posted a video recently talking about the bombing and how this was a landmark moment for Ukraine because they'd actually achieved a pushback on Russia in the occupied zone of Crimea because Russia has been in that area since 2014 and the bombing took place about 100 miles into the Crimea area. So this was really a poke in the eye for President Putin the day after his birthday. And the reason that this bridge is so important is that it links mainland Russia to Crimea, and Russia have been using this route to provide supplies to all of the troops who are fighting in the southern area of Ukraine. And as you'll have seen from the footage, some of the road bridge actually collapsed into the water and was obviously not available to be used. But within a matter of days, Russian authorities actually reopened the other side of the road bridge and posted footage online showing cars moving in a single direction. Now, I'm not a structural engineer, but I'm fairly sure that in most countries around the world, there would need to be extensive checks undertaken on this bridge to make sure that no structural damage had been caused by this massive explosion. And it was reported that Russia had sent some divers below the water to check out what was going on. But it does seem remarkable that they've opened the bridge so quickly and they're sending large volumes of traffic across it. However, the fact that one side of the road bridge has been closed is impacting on the levels of traffic, and it's been reported that there are now queues of up to 400 trucks waiting to board all of the ferries, taking everything from one side of the water to the other. So this has definitely impacted on Russia's ability to provide supplies to the troops on the front line, and they're now having to divert a lot of that traffic onto the water, which is putting a massive amount of strain onto those ferries. Now, in terms of the investigation into what actually happened, Russia's Federal Security Service have arrested 8 people that they say were involved in organising this explosion. And they've now pointed the finger directly at Ukrainian military intelligence and said that this was organised directly by Ukraine. Now, Ukraine have not accepted responsibility, so we've still got a question mark as to who's behind this. But the Russian investigators say that the explosives were loaded onto a truck and were camouflaged in rolls of construction polythene film on 22 pallets with a total weight of 22.7 tons. The truck was reported to have traveled from Ukraine via Bulgaria, Georgia, and Armenia, and was detonated once it got onto the appropriate part of the bridge. Following the recent annexation of the four occupied areas of Ukraine, a resolution was put forward to the United Nations by the USA, proposing the condemnation of this annexation and declaring it to be illegal. All of the 193 member states of the UN were asked to vote on this resolution, and the results are now in. 143 countries voted in favour of condemning the annexation, 35 countries abstained, 11 countries did not cast a vote, and 4 countries voted against the resolution. So therefore, they were saying that they supported the annexation. And those 4 countries are Belarus, which is no major surprise because they're the closest ally of Russia. If you follow the channel, you'll know that at the start of the war, Belarus actually facilitated Russian troops entering the northern area of Ukraine to try to take Kyiv. North Korea, which also isn't really a major surprise. Nicaragua, which has been supported by Russia historically, and Syria, which is in a similar situation. Now, in terms of the countries that abstained, the most notable of these was China. And this is entirely consistent with China's approach throughout the whole of this war. They've been staying neutral with a view to trying to develop the trading relationship with Russia further. In addition to the meeting of the United Nations, there was also a meeting of 50 countries from the West in Brussels who all committed additional military support for Ukraine with a particular focus on air defence systems, given the fact that there has now been an increase in the number of missile attacks in the country. And the most notable commitments came from France, who said that they would deliver radar and air defence systems to Ukraine over the next few weeks, the UK, which pledged more air defence systems, and Canada said it would provide artillery rounds amongst other supplies. And of course, in addition to that, the US recently announced that it was committing a further $625 billion worth of support. Now, if you follow the channel, you'll be aware that Ukraine recently made an application to join NATO on a fast-track basis. And NATO is the defence alliance of 30 countries that are predominantly located in Europe, but also includes the USA and Canada. So NATO covers a large amount of military force and obviously includes a number of countries that have nuclear weapons. And the ethos of NATO is predominantly a peacekeeping organisation. However, it does state that if any member of NATO comes under military attack, then the other members of NATO will be prepared to support them in their defence. So the fact that Ukraine is already in a war situation with Russia is really interesting, because if they're allowed to join NATO on a fast-track basis, obviously they would then be in the situation where potentially all these other members of NATO could get drawn into the war. And a senior Russian official has now come out and made a statement about this situation. Alexander Venediktov, the Deputy Secretary of the Security Council of the Russian Federation, said Kyiv is well aware that such a step would mean a guaranteed escalation to World War III. He also repeated Russia's stance that the West helping Ukraine means that they are a direct party to the conflict. And these comments follow on from President Putin's recent statements regarding the potential use of nuclear weapons. And all of this is really designed to make sure that Ukraine do not join NATO. Now, it's been reported that one of the reasons that Russia actually invaded Ukraine in February was that Ukraine at that time was talking about joining NATO, and Russia wanted to make sure that it went onto the military offensive before that happened, to make sure that NATO was not involved. So clearly, from Russia's point of view, the worst case scenario for them is that Ukraine does join NATO and that the other 30 nations are then officially involved in this warfare. But when you look at the bigger picture of what's going on here, all of the countries of NATO are actually providing a lot of financial and military support directly to Ukraine. So essentially, they're receiving the same amount of support as they would be if they were a member of NATO. The only difference really is that the forces who are fighting on the ground are not from those NATO countries. So we don't have officially US troops, UK troops, French troops, German troops actually on the front line. But everything else really points to the fact that NATO is supporting Ukraine. And Russia's obviously very frustrated about this. They were hoping for a similar outcome to what happened in Crimea in 2014, when they went in, occupied the area. There wasn't really a great deal of fuss. They had a vote and then they annexed the whole area. Job done. That's what they were hoping was going to happen with these four areas. Clearly, this is an entirely different situation to what happened 8 years ago. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video firstly to give you an update on what's going on with regards to the warfare. And what we're seeing is that Russia is really upping the ante. They are taking the offensive back to Ukraine. They've been on the back foot for the last few weeks, possibly months, in this conflict. They've been losing ground on a regular basis. But following the recent mobilization of more forces and the explosion on the Crimea Bridge, which has really given President Putin the motivation to get back into this war, we have seen lots of cities across Ukraine being bombarded with long-range missiles. And as I mentioned earlier in the video, they've now started deploying these kamikaze drones. Now, the use of those kamikaze drones has actually been raised as an issue by a lot of commentators, saying that Russia is now running short of all of its equipment, it's running short of money, and it's having to come up with low-cost ways of keeping this war going. And as I mentioned earlier in the video, Ukraine have reported that those drones are relatively easy to take out. So some of them have actually hit targets, but a lot of them have been destroyed in the air because they move at a much slower rate than the real missiles. But overall, the takeaway from what's going on the ground right now is that Russia aren't giving up in this war anytime soon. As we know, Putin recently signed a decree annexing these four areas of Ukraine. So he sees this as officially part of Russia from now on. So there is very little chance that Russia will withdraw from these areas. He's in it for the long haul. And calling up the new troops and sending in more missiles really sends the message to everybody that this war is going to go on at least for the rest of 2022 and probably well into 2023. And that is fundamentally bad news for the global economy. I've said it many times before, but the longer that this conflict goes on, the more uncertainty we've got, the more we'll have higher prices for things like oil and other commodities, and that's going to push up inflation, and we've already got dangerously high levels of inflation all across the world. So as long as this war carries on, we're going to continue in that situation, and the way that central banks are dealing with this in all of their home markets is to increase interest rates. And the increases in those interest rates is starting to cause pain in a lot of economies. We've taken on a lot of debt over the last few years. The COVID pandemic, there were a lot of lockdowns, a lot of companies and countries took on debt. So we're sitting with really high levels of debt right now, from a personal point of view, from a corporate point of view, and from a national point of view. So the last thing that everybody needs is for interest rates to be going up, because that's going to increase the cost of borrowing, means that you'll have less money in your pocket at the end of the month. And the cost of living being so high means that the standard of living is going down. You can't afford to do as many things as you used to do because it's more expensive and your wages aren't increasing at the right level. So the war carrying on isn't good news for anyone. And we've just heard that the West is now committing more money and more support to Ukraine, so they're not likely to give up either. So we've got two sides in this conflict now who aren't backing down. And Ukraine have made an application to NATO. And in response to that, Russia has come out and said, if you join NATO, this will escalate into World War III. And that's probably the most chilling message that we've heard over the last few months. We've heard it a number of times, but it's being repeated on a regular basis. And Ukraine has actually formally applied to join NATO. Now, they will actually need unanimous support in order to join NATO. And as we know, Turkey is one of the countries in NATO. It recently blocked the applications by Finland and Sweden to join NATO. Subsequently, it dropped that position after negotiating with both of those countries. So I think there's a reasonable chance that Turkey would vote against Ukraine joining, given the circumstances. But if it does join, then that does raise the possibility of NATO countries actually sending troops to the front line. Russia has declared that these annexed areas are part of Russia, and they will do anything within their means to defend the motherland. So the political side of things is starting to get overheated. Threats are being made, and there is a potential that this could escalate if Ukraine does join NATO. So hopefully you've enjoyed today's video, you found it interesting, informative and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.